Hey, this is Cody Jinks, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senores and senoritas. This is Chris Shiplett, and you're listening to Walking the Floor. I think this is episode 54 of Walking the Floor. 54 of Walking the Floor. That rhymes, unintentionally. But yes, we keep on trucking on down the line here on Walking the Floor. It's 90 degrees in Los Angeles this weekend, and the surf is pumping. And if you're down in Houston at the Chevy Metal Show, you've probably noticed that I'm not there, because I'm here in LA at home. It's my 13-year-old son's birthday. Well, he just turned 13. So happy birthday, Liam Shiplett. I officially have a teenager in my house, so I couldn't make the gig this weekend, but I'll be back at it with the boys next weekend out in Louisville, Kentucky. What else going on? We have a great interview today with Cody Jinks, but before we get to that, I want to talk to you about Zounds, man, because you got to get on Zounds.com and order your music gear, because the guys and girls at Zounds are real musicians, not salespeople. And Zounds has award-winning customer service and payment plans to make gear affordable. I'm not kidding, man. Zounds.com. If you find a better price somewhere else, Zounds will beat it. So get to it. And let's get to this. All right, I caught up with Cody Jinks a few months back when he was rolling through town. I think he was on his way to Stagecoach, I want to say, and he was on tour with Whitey Morgan. And he'd had a rough week. He'd had to let go a couple band members. I think there was maybe a drug issue, an arrest, something like that. He was switching it up but staying out on the road, and he managed to get by the studio and have a good talk. And you know what? This is the first time I have ever interviewed anybody with their parents sitting on the couch while we did the interview. It was cool. They were there, like, fact-checking him. And he even talks about, like, being a kid and checking out his mom's record collection and finding Black Sabbath and Deep Purple records and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. Like, you know, mixed in with his dad's honky-tonk stuff. Cody Jinks is a Texas artist, but he never wanted to be pigeonholed a Texas artist. He wanted to get out of Texas and tour all over the world, and that's what he's been doing. Since our interview, he actually put out a new record, I think earlier this month, called I'm Not the Devil, which, if I'm not mistaken, debuted at like number 4 on the country music charts. So he's doing well. Let's check out what Cody Jinks had to say on Walking the Floor.
Got out of hand, and I'm not the devil you think that I am.
I gotta say, this is the first time I've interviewed somebody with their parents present.
Yeah.
So we're making history for my podcast.
First time.
What's going on? Are you guys on the road? You touring?
We are. We played Phoenix last and had a night off last night, so we came on out to L.A. and met up with Mom and Dad, and I don't know where the band's at. They kind of split, so yeah, we'll meet up tonight.
That happens in the daytime.
Yeah,
on tour.
We'll meet up tonight when it's time to play.
And, like, are you somebody that tours a lot? Like, are you on the road a lot?
Yeah, I've been home about 3 weeks this year.
How many shows do you normally do a year?
We'll do anywhere from 170 to a little over 2.
All over the States?
All over the States.
Because I'm kind of fascinated, and every time I talk to an artist from Texas, I'm always fascinated about the Texas country music sort of circuit and history there of Texans supporting Texas artists so much.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really think you get that anywhere else in the States in the same way.
It's unique, you know. I really was never actually a part of that, you know.
Does that still exist? I mean, is there still like a sort of dance hall circuit?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I play all those places, but you know, we were always kind of the black sheep band in the Texas thing, and we were the guys that were trying to get the hell out of Texas, and everybody else, you know. A lot of bands seem to get pigeonholed into that whole, you know, Texas red dirt thing. And
what is the red dirt thing? Because I got to tell you, I have a band, like a country band, Americana type band. And we went out and opened for, I'm drawing a blank what the guy's name was, but he was like a red dirt artist. Yeah. We just did a few shows with them. And I honestly, like, I couldn't, like, put, I didn't understand, like, why is this called red dirt? It just sounded like kind of modern country music to me.
It's the way Oklahoma latched on, because the red dirt mostly is in Oklahoma. So most of those artists that kind of started that movement, you know, back in the 90s, early 2000s, were out of Texas and Oklahoma predominantly. Mm-hmm. And I guess they had to call it something, so they called it Texas red dirt.
But is there like a sort of a stylistic?
No, it's strange thing to it? Because, you know, bands that are under the Texas red dirt umbrella, you know, they may be rock and roll bands, you know, or country bands. I don't really understand, you know, it's not like a musical. There's no specifics, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, there's Americana and rock and pop country and country and swing, and, you know, they all kind of just fall under the Texas red dirt thing, I guess.
And you're saying that you were always kind of outside of that?
Yeah, I never got to be a part of the good old boys club, you know. Down there, the magazines, they run articles on the same bands every issue, you know. So we never really got into that. I never saw much of a use for it. Because we were the guys trying to get out of the state and try to, you know, do national as opposed to, you know, being regional. I've got a lot of friends that are in the Texas red dirt thing, you know, and a lot of those guys have big buses and can't afford to go north of Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's wild. It's such a like geographically specific scene.
You can make a great living, you know. I know guys that have put millions in the bank, never leaving Texas. You know, I mean, it's so, you know, you've been there, it's so big, you can, you know, start on one end and take you a month to get to the other end, you know.
And where do you live?
I was raised in Fort Worth. I live in Denton now, which is just about 30 miles north of Fort Worth.
Oh, okay, yeah. There used to be some punk rock club that my old band used to play at in Denton.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember what the
Groovy
name
Mule?
Was. I don't know. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I remember there was a certain point, like in the, you know, in the mid-90s when maybe there wasn't like a venue in Dallas we could play or something. So every time we went through that part of the country, we were always in Denton.
Yeah.
Isn't that like a big music school?
It is. North Texas, yeah. They have notably jazz. Some of the best drummers I've played with went there to play drums. It's a cool town. It's got a great vibe. You know, it's young.
College towns are always good. Always good for music.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. There's a lot of music. You know, there's always somebody playing somewhere down there.
And with what you do musically, why not Austin? Isn't there like a bigger music scene for that there?
Austin was actually one of the harder places for us to break into.
Really?
Just because, you know, 6th Street and all that, you know, where there used to be a whole bunch of really cool music venues, you know, you hear rock, blues, jazz, or country, you know, most of them are dance and EDM top clubs now. So, you know, the clubs that we play in Austin are a little bit more outside of the city limit. And, you know, Austin is, I don't know what they're trying to be, but it's not weird or cool anymore at all. You know, those old stickers that say "Keep Austin Weird,"
right?
Man, y'all lost it before you printed the stickers, man.
Yeah, that's funny.
But, you know, we play Austin when we have to.
And so you said you grew up in Fort Worth.
I did.
When did you? I'm curious. Like, what was? What are your earliest musical memories? What kind of drew you into being a music fan?
My dad played guitar.
Who happens to be sitting right here.
Who happens to be right there.
Yes.
Dad plays guitar and sings, and he did a little bit of the honky-tonks in the 70s and early 80s.
Oh, really?
And so he was always playing at home. Mom can sing really well. We grew up Church of Christ, so there was no instrumentation, you know, no music in the church. Everything was a cappella, so that served well doing harmonies and whatnot. You know, you have learning to listen and adjust where you're going. Our bass player, he's been with me 9 years. He grew up Church of Christ too, so he had the same kind of, you know, upbringing with the, you know, with the harmonies and all that kind of stuff. So
is that your sort of entryway, not only into music that you listen to, but like your first, I guess if there was no instrumentation, you weren't playing an instrument, but your first time singing?
Yeah, you know, I used to sing, and when I figured out I was writing songs, I really didn't know what I was doing. You know, nobody does, I guess,
sure,
for start. But
you know, it's funny because I ask almost every person I interview about their songwriting process.
Yeah.
And like to a man, nobody ever really has a concise answer on that, you know?
Yeah, you know, the only reason I started playing guitar was because I started writing these songs and I'd be singing them and, you know, in my room or whatever when I was a kid. And I was like, this sounds weird, man, just sitting here singing in my bedroom. I need to learn how to play the guitar. So learn how to play the guitar. And
how old were you at that point?
I was 16 when I got my first one.
And so were you growing up listening to country music? Because I read somewhere that you had like a metal band at one point.
Yeah, I when Dad was home, it was pretty much all country. But Mom had, I realized how cool my mom was whenever I busted into her box of vinyls and she had some Black Sabbath and
nice,
some Deep Purple and
really,
you know, and then.
God, your mom was way hipper than my mom. I was listening to like Anne Murray.
But yeah, we did that, and you know, I started getting into rock and roll. There was a lot of Elton John. I'm a huge Elton John fan, so I had kind of all of it, you know, around me, and I always loved all of it, you know, no matter what it was. And when I was, you know, my teenage years, Pantera was on top of the world, and they were not too far from where I grew up.
Mm.
And so they were huge. And I really,
where are they from?
Pantego, which is not too far from Fort Worth. It's okay. Down by Arlington. But, you know, we're talking 94, 95, 96, you know, when they were just owning it, and started getting into metal and ended up getting really into thrash. We played thrash. I did that from 97 to 03.
It's hard to imagine with your voice, which you have a really, like, you know, like a perfect country voice. It's hard to imagine you with that growly sort of metal screamy thing. Was that kind of what you were doing?
Yeah, I didn't even know I could sing country really until the metal thing was over, because I didn't mean to be in a country band at all. You know, after the band, we actually came out here for a couple months and everything imploded and the band broke up, and that was 03. And like I said, man, I didn't even know what I was going to do, but I got an acoustic, and, you know, at that point I hadn't even played an acoustic in years. So I bought an acoustic and started writing again, and everything was coming out country. So it just kind of happened naturally.
Mm.
And I had to retrain myself to sing that way.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, did you find yourself sort of drawing on that earlier, the stuff you learned in church growing up?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. You know, I had to relearn. It's a completely different style and, you know, completely different phrasings and, you know, content matter, you know, songs are all about the same things, you know.
Sure.
So, that, you know, it was just slowing it down and playing it with no distortion.
And so you mentioned that you came out to California, because I noticed you had some lyrical references to California in some of your songs. I was wondering if you had spent time out here.
We spent a couple months out here in 03. We had gotten to the point, the band that we were in, we were doing pretty good regionally. And, you know, after 6 years, we were like, we have to do something. You know, we got to do something drastic. And we came out here, and the night before we left, our drummer said, I'm not going. So the rest of us came out and then tried to hunt for a drummer, and L.A. is the last place you ever want to have to hunt for a drummer. So
drummers are the hardest people to deal with in rock and roll, man.
Yeah.
Because a good drummer writes his own ticket, you know?
They make what they want to make, you know? So,
like, in that band, were you playing guitar and singing?
Yeah.
At that point?
Yeah.
Okay. And was it your band? Were you the band, or was it more of a democracy?
It was more of a democracy. I did all the lyrics, and our guitar player and myself did all the music. But we ended up having too many chiefs and not enough Indians, and
you're like, my next band, I'm gonna be the only chief.
Yes. I vowed never to be in a band again.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it makes it the decision making process is a lot more streamlined that way, that's for sure.
Yeah, I didn't figure I was that hard to work with. I thought it was the other guy, and it turned out to be
the other guy.
Yeah, but but he's not playing anymore, and I still am.
So then, okay, so that band implodes, and then how did you, how did you start doing what you're doing now?
And I was heartbroken about that, and when you're young, it's like, man, this is the band I'm going to be in forever, right? Type deal. And
sure.
When I got home, I didn't have anything, but I drove home, and in my truck, all I had was my clothes and my guitar and my amplifier. And I was bummed for a while, and I really didn't know what to do. So I found an apartment and went and got an acoustic, and just sat on the couch and started writing these songs, or started writing, some songs. They turned out to be country songs, so I figured, what the hell? I grew up listening to country, and I still loved it. I've always loved it. And put a band together, got a residency, got an every Friday night thing at a bar in Fort Worth.
And, I love residencies. It's the funnest way to have a gig, man.
And it helped us, none of the guys that were playing with me then are with me now, but, it helped me to learn, the country thing. And
do you have a core group of guys that record and tour and play with you now? Or is it sort of, you mix it up?
I've kind of had a hell of a week, actually. I've lost half my band in the last week.
Oh, really?
Just different reasons. Had to let a couple of them go. But my right-hand man's my bass player, Josh, and he's been with me for 9 years. And but when I record, I record with my band.
Right. What happened with your guys that you parted ways with this week?
Well,
and on top of that, how are you keeping the tour going? Did you fly some new guys in?
It's in the process, yeah. Our drummer, I had to let him go after 2 years. We just kind of lost the vibe. He wasn't the same guy he was a couple years ago, and for whatever reason, I don't know. And then a few days ago, I had to get my steel player out of jail. He got messed up on a bunch of meth, so we had to get his parents to fly out, pick him up in Phoenix.
Yeah, steel players aren't easy to come by.
No, but fortunately, we've got Brett. He's filling in. He's been gracious enough to fill in until we get somebody imported. So we're running right now with a drummer that I've known for 4 days and 4 shows and Brett, but we're doing it.
Right on. Yeah, keeping it going.
You got to keep it rolling.
That's tough, man. Sometimes tours are they can fall apart just like that. You know? I'm curious, when you started playing, after your band broke up and you started what you're doing now, what led you to the sound that you have? Like, sort of a more, vintage style of country music. Why go that direction instead of trying to do something more mainstream and slick and get on the radio?
The slick mainstream stuff, I don't think has a lot of soul. I think the more traditional stuff, that we do, Whitey and, that's the stuff that resonated with me whenever I was younger, the outlaw guys, Merle and Willie and...
Sure.
Thanks, Dad. Merle and Willie and, Chris and all that kind of stuff. But
there's obviously a real hunger for that style of country music out in the world,
I think you're starting to see a turn, to where it's getting back to that, that kind of music, more traditional sound, I guess, where the songs actually have something to say, and it's not all pickup trucks and Mudden and Daisy Dukes and
Do you think the success of people like Sturgill and Margo Price and some people that are playing a more sort of old school flavor country music, is that going to reflect onto other bands, you know, doing similar things in that you could actually start hearing those bands on the radio, like on mainstream country radio?
Yeah, you will. In the next couple of years, you're gonna start seeing more guys pop up because, and maybe even not for the right reasons. There's going to be a lot of good ones out there, but you know, you're going to start seeing them pop up and try to do it.
Right.
You know, like, right. I'm going to be an outlaw now. I'm going to try this because it seems to be what's working, and those people will eventually weed themselves out.
Sure.
You know,
or even people that are, you know, current pop artists maybe try to incorporate that sound a little bit.
You're starting to see some of that too. You know, some of the Nashville guys, some of the pop guys, they're already starting to record, you know, different kinds of stuff, you know, because their labels are telling them, hey, we're having a swing here and now we got to go do this.
I mean, have you seen an uptick in recent years for yourself and your shows in terms
Absolutely.
Of, you know, people being interested in this style of country music?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, well, first off, the business in general, I think, is a business of longevity. It's, you know, how long can you hang with it and, you know, be willing to put up with all the stuff that comes with being, you know, in the music business, being a touring band, you know, but, yeah, that's, what was your question again, man? I'm sorry.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. How did, so you get your residency, you're starting to hone your craft, start change up your sound. At what point did you like get a record deal and start putting out records and going in the studio?
I never did get a record deal. We just started making records on shoestring budget.
Did you put them out yourself?
Yeah, we put it out ourselves, and we put all of our tours together for the first 7 or 8 years. Everything was DIY. You know, we handled everything everywhere we go. You know, we were setting it up, we were doing the routing, and it was all in house.
Right.
We figured if we were able to do it that way and keep our heads above water, that the material was strong enough to, you know, carry us through without having all the big support and stuff like that. And I think timing has a lot to do with it. You know, like I said, the shift's coming back around, so guys like us that are, you know, doing the more traditional, you know, old school type of thing, you know, it's about timing. You know, we've been here for years. All of us have been doing this for a long time, but it's finally starting to come around, I think.
I mean, you're on your way out to Stagecoach this weekend, right?
Yes, sir.
The Stagecoach Festival. Have you ever played a big, have you played Stagecoach before?
I've not played Stagecoach before. I've done a lot of festivals, but I don't think I've done one this big.
Right. I'm curious as to what your experience is like at those kind of festivals where you're side by side with all, you know, every kind of country band out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the day that we play, you know, Whitey's playing that day. It, you know, there's a few I'm really excited about. Billy Joe Shaver is going to be there. I played with him. He's awesome. Emmylou Harris is there.
I'm trying to actually nail down an interview with Billy Joe Shaver.
Yeah, he's the coolest. He's such a cool dude. Marty Stewart's going to be there that day, which I'm pretty stoked. I've seen him, but you know, I'll be trying to keep my, you know, my fanboy down to a minimum around those people.
Yeah,
you know,
it's tough.
If I'm able to get a picture, get something signed, I will. I'm not going to bother anybody, but you know, come on, man.
Have you had much interaction with like some of the people that are your influences?
Yeah, a little bit. You
like,
know,
does a guy like Billy Joe Shaver, when he hears you, is he like, doing it right, son?
He actually told me that. We were playing with him down in Luckenbach, and I walked off stage. There's this little green room area off stage, and he's standing back there, and it's just me and him, and I'm putting my guitar in my case, and I didn't want to bother him. I wasn't even looking at him, and he just goes, hey, boy. I said, yes, sir. He goes, I was listening. I liked them songs. And I said, thank you, Mr. Shaver. And then I was trying to think of something else not dumb to say. And the first thing I could think of was, will you sign my guitar? So
that works. That worked. Did he sign it?
He did. I didn't have a marker on me. He had a marker in his pocket. And
I mean, that's pretty high praise from a guy that's written, you know, Billy Joe Shaver. He's like an all-time classic songwriter.
He is the outlaw's outlaw, man. You know, that guy has written stuff that everybody has sung, you know. So it was a special moment. That was really cool.
I mean, who, like, when you look out at your shows, who's in the crowd? Who are your fans? Is it rock and roll people? Is it people that have come to country music through the side door? Is it you know, older folks like your parents that are like fans of that style of music? Like who's in the crowd?
Our demographic is so widespread. I mean, from, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old college kids to grandmas and grandpas, bikers and suits and doctors and lawyers and cowboys. And, you know, I mean, it's everybody. It's really cool. You know, I mean, our age demographic is mostly your 25 to 45. That's our biggest demographic. But yeah, man, I mean, you're liable to see a bunch of bikers in a bunch of suits, you know,
side by side, right?
The way it should be.
And you know, you mentioned songwriting earlier. I wouldn't mind. Like I said, I ask this of just about everybody that I interview, you know, about their personal songwriting process. But can you talk a little bit about yours?
Sure. Yeah. You know, a lot of people ask, you know, do you write the melody first or the words first? You know, I don't really have a specific way to do it. You know, I'll get a melody and maybe be able to write on top of it or have some words and then try to figure out a melody.
Are you a disciplined songwriter? Like, do you do it?
No.
Okay.
No. And I really...
Is anybody? I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I write mostly at night or early in the morning. Those are the two times that I like to write. And I don't write as much as I used to in terms of, you know, I used to write 10, you know, and write 9 bad ones to get 1 good one. And I stopped doing that. I changed my method. Now I conscientiously don't let myself write if I have an idea. Because if I have the idea and it sticks, then it's going to stay up there. And the best way I can explain it is, like, if I have a line, you know, it just goes in circles in my head, picking up words, and it puts itself together. And then I'm, after that, I can't take it anymore, you know, because it's there and I gotta write it down.
Like, if it's still kicking around after a few days, you're like, I gotta work this into something.
Mm-hmm.
And what about recording? And you
hate it.
Really? I mean, do you guys, when you record, do you guys all get in a room together and record kind of live, or what's your approach to that?
Yeah, we track live. We try to get, you know, the drums and the bass down, and then, you know, we'll dub over everything else. But I typically...
How come you hate it?
It's stressful, and it's too much. You know, I mean, you know how you get studio head, you know, and it's just, everything just turns to mush. I'll start sound the same. Yeah. And, I remove my, if I'm not tracking, I'm usually not sitting in the studio.
Hmm.
You know,
that's interesting. Really? So you're not there kind of like overseeing what everybody's doing?
No, our bass player, Josh, he's been with me long enough, and he's produced this record and he produced our last one. He knows what I want before I know what I want.
Right.
You know, so he's really, really good at making the calls in term, and they'll come grab me like, hey man, check this out, and you know, I'll yay or nay it or
right,
whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I've got a good team around me, and you know, I show them the songs and it's their job to make it sound cool.
Right. Flesh it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice to hear that you give them the freedom to, you know, explore the song a little bit on their own.
Yeah, and I don't show them the songs until we get in the studio. When we go to the studio, they don't have any idea what we're
really
going to do. Yeah.
Is that intentional to keep it fresh?
It is. Because I've found, you know, once we get, you know, the basic structure down, you know, my phrasing and stuff usually done, but once we get the structure down, I've found that usually the first or second thing they play is the right thing.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to give them too much time to overthink it.
Sure.
So It's worked for us on the last couple records.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a band.
Yeah.
When on your recordings.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of your songs, would you want to play one?
Sure, man.
Awesome.
I see. I didn't bring a guitar.
I've got an acoustic in the next room, and I just want to say thank you for coming down. I'm sure you got a gig tonight. You're busy. You're here with your folks. You guys probably want to go sightsee or whatever.
No
but
worries, man.
Much appreciate you coming down today.
I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Fire away.
Fire away whenever you're ready, my man.
I cast no stones, and I build no walls, and I tell the truth. The truth comes to call, and I try to walk that narrow way. Sometimes I go over the lines and I won't make it back till the next day. But I cast no stones. What gives you the right? Tell me my business. Good God, man, you're out of your mind. So put up your Bible, or let me get in mine. I'm not dragging the whole world ahead. You're wasting my time. I don't talk with Jesus as much as I should. I don't read that good book every day like I could. But I like to stop at the end of the day, and I pray that I hurt nobody, and somebody new found their way. And I cast no stones. What gives you the right to tell me my business? Good God, man, you're out of your mind. So put up your Bible, or let me get in mine. I'm not dragging the whole world ahead. You're wasting my time. Say a prayer for me, brother, and I'll see you on down the line.
That was great, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your time, man. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. All right. Yeah, that was Cody Jinks doing his Walk in the Floor acoustic stripped-down version of his tune, Cast No Stones, which is not off his latest album, but the one before, I think. You can find him at CodyJinks.com or at CodyJinksMusic on the Twitter.
And make sure you pick up his new record, I'm Not the Devil. Debuted at number 4 on the country charts, man. I think he's out on the road again with Whitey Morgan as we speak. Or maybe he just was. Or maybe he's about to be. I don't know. But if you like what you heard today, make sure you go to the iTunes store and subscribe to Walking the Floor. And while you're at it, you can listen to all the old episodes and you can leave us a review. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week. I'm not sure which episode it's going to be. It might be my Dave Cobb interview. It might be Michaela Ann. We'll see. We'll see what I'm in the mood for. We'll see you back here next Monday. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Walking the Floor with Chris Shiflett. Adios, amigos!